Welcome to Leaders and Managers Hub, the podcast. I'm Ray. Today we have part two of Gary's interview with Helen Elizabeth Evans. If you haven't already, I encourage you to go back and listen to the part one. Helen is an absolutely captivating conversationalist, and she has many good things to talk to us about in the part one. But I'm just going to hand over now, without any further ado, to Gary and Helen for part two. It's just so incredible. Gotta have it, can't let it go. If you don't try, you'll never know that this is incredible. Now have you ever wondered how the best did it? They never second guessed, they didn't set limits. Are you a follower or a visionary? Can you handle the load that you were meant to carry? Cause we're on a mission, listen, it's beyond description. We don't wanna fit in if we're living in a contradiction. We need a brand of passion.
This brings us really on to the nitty-gritty of what we're going to be sort of sharing today, because I think from your experience, you know, one of the ways that hand and fingerprint analysis can be used is to reveal something about a person's leadership style or type. I mean, have I got that right?
Yes. I mean, clearly I would need to see an individual's hands to be able to interpret their leadership style accurately. There are certain general or four general sort of personality types that we are all influenced by. Some of us have a combination of them, and some of us have, you know, just one of them. So maybe I should take the time to explore the four different types and just see, if you're a listener, what you recognize within yourself.
Yeah, that'd be perfect.
Okay, great. So, the first thing to understand about everything to do with fingerprint analysis, everything to do with actually one's personality, and even one's leadership, you know, one's ability to communicate, is everything is a double-edged sword. So I wanted to kind of explain what I mean by that, is that, you know, we have certain characteristics. So for instance, stubbornness is often seen as a negative trait, an inability to be flexible. But if you use that same energy in the right circumstances, it's actually tenacity, right? Which is an ability to stick to something and complete it no matter the hurdles. So this is a very important aspect of understanding yourself, that actually certain aspects of yourself you may see as negative, but actually if you apply them in the right circumstances, they are positive. They are only negative if you are applying them indiscriminately in the wrong circumstances. So if we go to the leadership styles, okay, the first one is, and I would like you to imagine shall we call it a seesaw, if you want, depending on where you're putting the weight as to how it shows up. But both sides of the seesaw are relevant, okay? So on one side is, you know, people who tend to experience a lot of chaos, drama, anxiety, craziness, you know, a little bit of just high energy, shall we call it. And on the other side is, let's just call it, like, if you've got a switch, the switch is either on or it's off. So this is the on switch, where we're high energy. In the off switch, we're like exhausted, tired. We just want to escape. We just want to kind of go and jump into bed and just have a duvet day. Or we want to sit and just binge watch, I don't know, Downton Abbey, say from the beginning of the first series all the way to the end of the last series, all in one sitting. While we don't listen to the phone, we sit there, we want no input. So it's almost like this on or off. Now, the gift in a person often like this, which they often don't realize because they're either living in one side or the other, is that other people, bizarrely enough, they have this ability to make other people feel safe. They have this ability to really ground a situation, to ground discussions, to bring it back to reality, to bring it back to, is this a life or death issue? What's really important here? And when you start to understand that in between this craziness, when you find that balance, when the seesaw is not swinging one way or the other, right? You can actually be a master in a crisis. You are a perfect leader in any, you have this ability, the adrenaline kicks in and boy, the focus kicks in and you can lead in a crisis very easily. However, you have to manage yourself quite well, knowing that the on time requires a balance of off time. So if you can put yourself in leadership positions where you focus, get the job done, let's focus on what really matters. That's your gift. But also, in order to ensure that you maximize your gift and are always in your best version of yourself in those circumstances, it is so important to book time off. It's so important to book that escapist time out. You know, whether it's for some people, it might be, I don't know, you know, go on a cycling ride for I don't know how many miles, you know, after you've had a serious, I'm thinking like paramedics, say, when they're in these crazy situations, to have some time or do some activities that allow them to just get out of their head, to switch off and just recharge. The negative version of that is obviously the duvet day. The positive version of recharging might be the long bike ride or the long run or something else, or maybe some creative pursuit. So that is one type of leader, a leader who is naturally inclined or has a natural ability to handle high intensity situations where focus, control, get the job done quickly is. But inside themselves, they may actually just be an escapist or a person who has a lot of drama going on in their heads. You need to choose who you're going to be and whether you actually want to feed the drama or the escapism. And hopefully you don't want to feed either and you want to find that middle ground. The way that I've explained that, Gary, the first one, does that make sense?
It does, yes. And is there a particular name or, dare I say, label for that kind of personality type?
I call that personality type the peaceful warrior.
Okay.
Because it's all actually about bringing people back to peace, relaxation, you know, making people feel safe, but they also have a lot of warrior energy, like they can just get out there and do it.
Right. Okay.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Okay. So then, the second type, which I think is my experience in the corporate environment, is that this one shows up the most, or at least isn't necessarily true, but everybody's trying to be this person, right? And this one I call the wise strategist. And the two energies are, it's all around decision-making. It's either trying to collect too much information, or just there's never enough information to make a decision and take an action, or just taking inappropriate risks and not actually sifting through the information. So this particular leader, actually, when they finally sort of understand that they are actually really naturally very analytical, they are great at the bird's eye view, looking at the big picture and coming up with a strategy as to how we're going to get from A to B. But they have to get out of that habit, out of that habit of either procrastinating and not owning their decisions. It's all about commitment. It's like they don't want to commit to something. So one of the negatives might be that they, a positive is once they commit, they fully commit. But they're not very good at actually changing track. So if they get themselves on the wrong track, then they start to think, how am I going to get off this? So often they don't want to get on a track at all and they don't want to commit to something. So they procrastinate a lot. See what I mean? Because the procrastination is a desire to get it right. Now, if you as a listener are the person who always needs to feel like you have to get it right, I would put this to you and say to you, in order for you to really reveal your best leadership skills, you need to give yourself permission to make a decision, take action. And if it's not working, say, this is not working, I'm going to choose a different track. But not to actually wait until you get it right, because you will never step into your brilliant leadership if you continue along that path. It will never help you. What you're really aiming to do is to actually find out, use your analytical skills to figure out for each decision you need to make what's relevant here. Not like what, you know, the whole from A to Z relevancy, but what's really relevant. What are the key things that are going to give me the outcome that I'm looking for? And then you need to look at the decision you made, see the outcome. Maybe you don't have to wait to say if you're making a decision that's going to take a 9 months to get an outcome. You want to be reassessing every month or every, you know, whatever it is. Do I seem closer to my outcome? The direction I'm going, is it actually working for me? And be willing to adjust if things aren't working. I don't necessarily mean that you should be just automatically throwing the baby out with the bathwater and just getting off the track because it's not working. Some things take a while to get a result. But use your smarts, use your intellect, because you have that and you're brilliantly analytical. And you're smart at the bird's eye view stuff. You're not big on the details, so find somebody else to do the detail for you. But you know, always use your bird's eye ability to look at things in a logical, sensible manner, and make decisions. A decision requires an action. You know, make a decision, take an action, review. Did I look at the right information in order to make this decision? Maybe there was some other information that actually I should have considered, and maybe some information I did consider was irrelevant. Let me become, your whole point of this is you becoming a wise strategist, a wise decision maker. And it's not about the decision, it's about the act of deciding. That's where your leadership gifts are, your ability to take action, make a decision, and make changes to the to that as you go along. Did I explain that clearly enough, Gary?
Yeah, that's really good. And I think you're right. There is a lot of that about it's that, particularly when it's everything is, you know, performance related, and people are looking at, you know, right, how's this person doing? How's this person? Are they stepping up? And it's that, you know, do I really want to put my name to that decision? Because if it goes pear shaped, that's going to be, you know, what happens then? So then perhaps they either don't make a decision, or they might rush into one, or they might not make a decision at all. And with both of these types so far, it's this balance for people between, you know, the two ends of it. And it's just being able to get that balance right so that it works for them and for the team and the organization.
And, you know, but the other thing is also sometimes the bosses are too busy sweating the small stuff. You know, when you're looking at analyzing your team, a team member or whatever, you're looking at details and you're asking yourself, and you're kind of sweating the small stuff over these details with this person. You need to be a bit more big picture. I learned a real lesson from my father, who was in business as well. And he said, you know, sometimes you have a team of people and there's one person who just never seems to get any work done, right? And you want to get rid of them. But what you don't realize is that person actually motivates the rest of the team to be more productive. So even though they aren't particularly productive, the rest of the team, because of the hijinks and the nonsense that person gets up to, get way more done because they're laughing so much. Whereas you take that person out of the picture, suddenly these people are miserable. They don't achieve nearly as much. So it's really important as that kind of a leader to really look at the big picture and say, and don't sweat the detail.
Yes.
And you will be much more successful.
Which leads us to
or leadership style. Now, this is the one that I'm really passionate about, because I think, especially in the corporate environment, this is discouraged the most. However, it is the most common leadership style, and the one that actually would suit people the most, because if you look at your fingerprints, you know, I don't have a picture because we're doing a podcast here. It's all audio to show you, but there are four fundamental fingerprint types. Now, every single fingerprint out there is completely unique. Every single fingerprint, even on your fingers, they may look similar, but each one is completely unique, which is why they are often used to identify us physically, you know, when you go through the border post or whatever the case may be. And also, of course, they tell you about your identity internally as well. But if you look at your fingerprints, the most common one is a type of fingerprint that looks like a wave that's kind of cresting. It's like a loop that goes over a whole bunch of little lines that look like a loop. And it is the most common among human people, but it also represents the one that tells us that these people have emotions are a fundamental part of their nature. We are fundamentally, as human beings, deeply emotional. It is who we are. We can't change that. We are not machines. And this type of leader is the what I call the empathic networker, if you want, or the empathic leader, if you want another way to. But they're really, really great at connecting with people. Connection is their gift. And if you understand how connection actually happens with people, connection happens when you share something that is possibly a little vulnerable with one person, and then the other person might share something a little vulnerable back. And that creates a trust between you, a connection between you that allows you to, I think, you know, be less wary and as a result, perform better. Because when we are wary of people, we don't fully express ourselves and our gifts because we're too busy trying to keep ourselves safe. If we feel you know, like there's a connection with a person and they kind of get us, they understand us, and they're going to be on our side, and they're not going to judge us for small little mishaps. They realize that we're fundamentally trying to do a good job, and sometimes we go a bit off piste, and they're going to help us deal with that and then get back on track. We are going to be better team players because we have a leader who connects, who we can connect with. And so most people actually are in this particular category. Now, the two sides of this, the struggles on this two side, are the people who bury their emotions and don't feel anything. And I put that in inverted commas because I'm definitely was more in that category. I went to boarding school most of my, from the age of 8 to 18. So nobody ever taught, you know, expressing emotions was just not done in my childhood. And I still to this day sometimes struggle with knowing what I feel. So that's on the one side, is you know, these buried emotions. I'm just being logical, I'm just being sensible, or whatever the case may be. I don't do emotion, and emotions scare me, and they're not my best friend, and they just get me into trouble. Yeah. On the other side can be the oversensitive types who react at the drop of a hat to everything, whether they cry, punch out their hands, you know, the buried emotions that just suddenly, we can swing between those two if we're going back to the seesaw idea. You know, it's almost like I've buried my emotions for so long and something triggers and I just get my fist out and I just hit something, or I just burst into tears, or whatever the case may be. We just suddenly react to something because we've been avoiding reacting for so long. Now, if we can find a balance between that, where we start to realize all our emotions are is simply the language of our subconscious. Our subconscious actually is, you know, sees and hears everything going on around us. Our conscious, I think of our subconscious a bit like a big factory, you know, and all the lights are off. And our conscious is like us walking around the factory with a headlight on. So we can look at certain aspects of what's going on in the factory at a time, but we can't see everything that's going on. Mm-hmm. Whereas our emotions give us indications of where we need to go and look in the factory to do some healing or to resolving or whatever the case may be that needs to happen. And when we can start working with our emotions and seeing our emotions simply as a language that we need to have to learn to understand, I'm feeling angry here because such and such, this person has done this thing. Then you say, well, what is it about this thing that they've done that is making me angry? You know, and somebody say, for instance, just constantly leaves his cup of coffee on my desk the whole time. And it's got to a point where I'm starting to get really annoyed, right?
Yeah, and that'd be me. Yeah. The one getting annoyed, by the way, I wouldn't be giving my coffee to anybody.
Yeah,
well, so be gripped in my hand,
leaving it there, right? Keeps putting it down, and you end up having to throw it away, and it's always half filled or whatever. You know, it's just really annoying. But actually, just sit there for a minute and say, "Well, what is it about this? This is annoying me." And each person may answer differently. So, for instance, for me, I might say, "I feel really disrespected. It's like I'm like, you know, it's like I'm not even here." Like, you know, they think it's okay to leave their trash on my table. Like, what am I, just like a piece of furniture, you know? Mm. And so then I'm thinking to myself, well, so that's my thinking that is determining that I'm actually feeling disrespected. He probably didn't intend that at all. That's not, he's just thoughtless, and it's a convenient place and it had nothing personal. But understanding what's bugging me helps me to change my thinking that is causing me to be bugged. And also then allows me to have a healthy conversation with the other person rather than an angry conversation. And just simply say, you know, every time you leave a coffee here, I end up having to put it away. I am not your local cleanup girl. And please, can you go and take care of your own trash and show some respect, please? You know, just say it in a nicer way than I just said it. But it's you know, it's an opportunity. And the interesting thing is that the moment you express your emotions in a healthy way like that, they leave. The moment you get an understanding of what the message is, they no longer start controlling you. And I think a leader who can actually feel their emotion. So for instance, let's go back to my example where that woman behaved childishly, who the woman leader behaved childishly in response to something I did, which, you know, I just didn't express myself in a healthy way, but it wasn't that bad. If she in that moment stopped and felt her feelings and thought, this girl's annoying me, but then just took a step back and said, what's really going on here? how do I want to show up as a leader here? Is me just throwing my toys out the cot and behaving childishly an appropriate expression of how I want to be seen? Is it going to earn me the respect that I actually want? How can I actually honor myself and how I feel about what's happened while at the same time, being a good leader? Because I'm not asking her, I don't think shutting down how she felt was the answer either. It was just simply saying, Helen, that really triggered me, what you just said. And can we just talk about it in a sensible way? What's going on? Why did you need to express yourself that way? Okay, well, what I need you to do is this and this and this instead. Do you see how that is an empathic leader, a person who's, because she understands how she feels and she honors how she feels, she also understands the other person has feelings, and those feelings don't define that person forever. It's just a moment in time. And the way that she manages me and my feelings will probably create a deeper and stronger bond between us. So I'll probably do anything for her next time, and I will go away around singing her praises that she wants. And I will always want to please her because of how she has been empathic towards my feelings and how she's responded.
Yes, it's not taking it personally. It's just looking at the behavior and saying, that's not the behavior I want them to continue with. So how can I work this so that they change, but also, you know, there's a win on both sides.
Yeah, but even your words, the way that you express that there is very corporate. And I'm not saying all corporate ideas are wrong, but I think that sometimes this type of stuff doesn't, if we analyze it too much, it loses the point. The point is to put a bit of heart into the work that you do, and for the other, and to connect with the other person. And the leader has to honor their emotions too. So it's not that they don't feel anything and they only are thinking about the other person and how can they get the other person to do what they wanted to do. They need to just really care. They need to show they care, and they need to show they have feelings, but express it in a healthy way, not in an emotional way. That makes sense?
Yes, yes.
So then the last type, which is the type that I meet a lot. And they are the type that are very service-driven, I guess. I call them the empowerment experts. They don't actually know that they're empowerment experts until I've explained it to them.
Actually, yeah, you're one of those.
you're one of those, right? What they may find themselves doing is on the one, it's all about service in many ways. So, or helping is another word for that, right? They like to help. So on the one level, they're always helping everybody. Like, you know, before anybody even asks, they're fixing things or doing things. And often they do things to a very high standard. You know, their ability to get a job done is, they do jobs to a really good standard. They, you know, they tick all the boxes. They dot the I's. They cross the T's. They really do a great job. And they probably usually don't just dot I's and cross T's, but they might even make sure it's all served on pink paper. You know, it's that level of taking everything to the next step. Now, clearly a guy's not going to do pink paper, but you get the point that I'm trying to make.
You
never know. Exactly. There might be a few out there. But the point really is that they take everything to the nth degree in terms of trying to do a really great job, and often leads to a huge amount of stress for them, especially if they can't get it quite right. But also it makes, if they are always operating like that, what they find themselves doing is they will do jobs because they think they do it best and other people can't do it as well. They will often lead to exhausting themselves and also alienating those people underneath them, because those people underneath them can never do a job that will ever please their leader. On the other side, you know, and they think they are doing everything to serve everybody. It's all about them. It's all about taking care of everybody else. And they perceive themselves as helping out and then getting really annoyed when they're not their efforts are not appreciated. On the other side, they may say, well, bugger you lot, it's all about me. And they may become quite selfish, and it may all be really about doing a great job for themselves, and they really don't give a damn what anybody else is doing. And really, they need to find a balance in between, because their true bliss, what they really love more than anything else, is actually serving and is actually helping. But the only way that they can experience that true bliss of that is innate to their soul is when they help people who want their help. So the first thing before you help is to always ask, you know, can I do this thing for you? And you can't do this. Well, there are two things that need to happen. First is they can be quite obligation and duty driven. So the first thing they have to figure out is am I trying to do this out of obligation or duty, or is it something I really truly want to do? And if they can say that it's something they really truly want to do, then they want to actually ask the other person, I truly want to do this for you. Would it be okay if I did it for you? And the other person has to say yes. And if the other person says yes, then it's more likely they can have a really positive experience through sharing what they're great at and helping another person out. But actually, if they want to take their leadership to a whole new level, they have to. It has to stop being about what they're doing, and it has to start being about how they're being. And almost, they need to start to recognize that they are natural teachers. They are natural empowerment experts. They are really great. They can see how the job can be done amazingly. And what they need to do is take each team member and gently lead them up the steps so that they can do it a little bit better each time. But not kind of saying to a person, here's this job and this is what perfection looks like. Go from zero to perfection. But actually to hold their hand through the process, but allow the other person to do it with just some support from them on how they can do it better. They become the most, I think, the leaders that people love the most, because people become stronger by being in their team. People become more able. People become more capable. They feel more that they can actually get a job done because this person is unbelievably supportive and a naturally very good teacher. And when this person stops making their pleasure come from the level of perfection that their people, the people underneath them are achieving, but more about focusing on their own perfection and achieving their own perfection on a personal level, like, you know, improving their teaching abilities or whatever the case may be, or anything they're personally achieving, doing it for themselves, not for anybody else, then they achieve satisfaction. Did I explain that clearly?
Yes, yes. And I was thinking, yeah, I see some traits of myself in that one, I think. So
potentially, yeah, you could be like the kind of leader people truly, truly like worship.
Thank you, my followers. Tomorrow the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you never know. You never know. But yeah, no, I think that's really good. And I love it with each of those, again, that sense of the kind of two, the sort of the scale, so it can go from one end to another. And it's almost like, you know, graphic equalizer on the stereo. You've got the sort of slider control and you've got the, you know, ability. We each have this ability to be able to alter where we are on the scale, should we choose to.
I talked about the on off switch before, right at the beginning, with a peaceful warrior. I always say they should seek their dimmer switch. And I, you know, so that they can actually choose what level the light is on at. And I think that's true for each of these leadership styles, is that, you know, sometimes it's appropriate, for instance, in the empowerment expert, it's appropriate to be teaching somebody and to be really focusing on teaching them. But other times it's more appropriate to be focusing on their own stuff and just letting people get on with things. It's about developing a discernment about when each of your gifts is appropriate to express. And then that's when you get this flow, where you get this thing where you go, oh my God, I love who I am. And oh my God, I love my gifts. And because you are using them in the right circumstances.
Yeah, and I love that word discernment. So it's really, as you say, it's really being sort of conscious about who you are and how you're doing things.
Again, it's going back to what we said about leadership. It's how you are showing up in each situation.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. And so thank you. So we've sort of got these sort of four, you know, sort of personality types, and again, they're not sort of labels. They're just ways of helping people to understand themselves and others. So if we were kind of to meet, you know, leaders and managers, I mean, what should we be looking out for, you know, with their hands? I mean, what could we do to
a little bit of entertainment? Okay, so if you're looking at people's, and I say it's entertainment, but it actually can be really, really useful.
Yeah, I mean, apart from putting their hands on the photocopier and saying, oh, it's nothing, yeah, don't worry about it.
And if you look at their hands, often, you know, you will be amazed at what you intuitively seem to know about hands. You don't actually have to almost learn about hands to intuitively sense what is true about somebody. So for instance, somebody who has very strong, capable, worker-like hands, they are likely to be a doer. They're likely to want to do action and want to have some physical result at the end of it. So don't give them a fine art project to do because it's too wishy-washy for them. They want, you know, give them some, this is the simplistic example, but you know, they're the kind of child, when they were children, you gave them blocks that they could then go and build something with. It was tangible, something obvious. You know, people with strong hands almost, you know, they often can be short, stubby fingers and a stronger, wider palm, more muscular. They need something physical to do. Now you look at another person who might have long, slim palms and long, slim, sort of like thin fingers. Those people are deeply sensitive. Be careful in terms of how you express with them. Don't do the bull in the china shop thing. They, if you allow them to, you often have to make space sometimes for them to communicate. They're not going to be as upfront, say, as I am in the way that I communicate. You may need to sort of almost leave spaces or ask questions or to bring things out of them. They're also more likely to be artistic or creative in a way and possibly more intuitive. So give them the more, you know, the less menial task, the task that might require something a bit more pretty in a way to do. They will respond far better. But most importantly, do remember that they're probably highly sensitive. So the way that you might express with a person like that would be very different to the way that you might express yourself with a person with much stronger or powerful hands. That's an example, one thing. And by the way, the reason why I said you automatically intuitively do this is before I learned anything about hand analysis, I was always kind of interested. I would always somehow look at people physically and our hands, we often use our hands to express ourselves. And I would intuitively sort of almost get a sense of what certain things meant. And I was blown away when I actually studied hand and fingerprint analysis and discovered a lot of what I had thought would actually turned out to be true. So, you know, when they talk about somebody being thin skinned, they often do have physically thin skin. Whereas people who, you know, people thick skinned who don't seem to be affected, they often do have very thick skin. You know, it is really kind of fascinating how much your body actually does represent your personality in so many ways. Another way to, which is kind of interesting to look at is it's not always easy to tell straight away, but sometimes it's very obvious. If you look at the length of a person's index finger, you know, that's the finger you point with, the finger that you use to pretend that it's, you know, it's a gun. That finger is a finger that represents our sense of power in the world. Hence, when a person points at you with that finger, it's very uncomfortable. Try getting somebody to point at you with any of the other fingers other than that power finger. And you'll see what I mean by the other fingers just don't seem to have an impact. Whereas that just index finger makes you feel so uncomfortable. You know?
Yeah.
It does represent how much energy or whatever power we put into the world. And if you look at that in relation to the ring finger, now you know, the ring finger is the, you know, when we get married, the finger we put the ring on, whether it's left or right doesn't matter. But if we look at the length of the ring finger in comparison with the length of the index finger, what I would like to tell you is there's three different things that could happen. And by the way, hands can be different whether it's left or right. If it's your right hand, it's how you show up in public, because that's the hand we reach out to shake hands with, right? It doesn't matter whether you're left-handed or right-handed. Your right hand is how you show up in public, and your left hand is how you show up in your private life, where you feel safer and more comfortable with people in general. Neither of your public face is no less you than your private face. You know, your private face is not all of who you are. It's just how you show up when you're comfortable versus when you're being a bit more formal and a bit more. Both of them are equally valid. Anyway, so in your, it doesn't matter which hand it is, but if the index finger is longer than the ring finger, obviously longer, that will tell you that the person, and this may be true for you, even if your hands are like this person likes to be in charge. Now, if they are a boss, then you know, let them feel like they're in charge, right? But if they are a member of your team, you might think, I have to put them in charge of something. Because if this person is not put in charge of something, they are going to cause trouble. They need something to be in charge of. If the ring finger is longer than the index finger, what that tells you is this person has a much more, what they traditionally call a masculine brain. And that doesn't mean male brain. It means a more logical brain, a more strategic brain. But it also tells you that they really love appreciation and applause. So if you if they're a team member, make sure that you always tell them what a great job they've done. Wow, that's amazing. Keep telling them authentically. Obviously, if they're not doing a great job, you can't give them a great job. Because if they don't get appreciation and applause, the very least they like is some level of communication, some level of feedback. So they're not the kind of team person or say boss that you want to just walk away from and not be consistently communicating with. They like feedback, preferably positive feedback, but any kind of feedback is better than nothing. Just leaving them alone is not going to work and not keep them motivated at all. Now the other thing to also remember about a person with a long my father had this, I have this, but my son and my father had particularly long index fingers. And what I found with them is that they struggle with empathy. They have to learn how to empathize. They can't look at somebody's face and imagine how that person is feeling and take that person's feelings into consideration. It doesn't come naturally to them. So don't judge them when they can't, they just don't get it because you're looking unhappy and they just don't get that you're unhappy. You have to express it in words. They need word communication much more than visuals. They're not very good at reading between the lines. So don't be hard on people who can't read between the lines, who have that very long ring finger. Now, if you have people that you see, and this is more common, I think, when both the ring finger and the index finger are the same length, these people are not logical. They're not strategic. They're much more empathic. They have a natural ability to look at somebody and see how they're feeling. They have a more, what is traditionally called a feminine brain, they can read between the lines. They are, I laugh because in our house, I'm the one with the more masculine brain and my husband is the one with the more feminine brain. So you have to tell me things directly. So if you say to me, I'm thirsty, right? I would say, oh, you're thirsty. I don't automatically assume you expect me to go and get you some water or some tea or whatever the case may be. I go, oh, so you're thirsty. Whereas if my husband says I'm thirsty, he means, can you make me tea? Can you make me water? You know, get me water. Mm. Can you do something for me? It's all about, you know, he's all about the communicating the extra information on the side. Whereas I'm like, it's what you see is what you get, right? There's no going in between. So it's important to understand that about the two different types. Are they indirect communicators or direct communicators? And you can understand that from their hands, just looking at the length of their finger. There's some ideas at any rate.
Yeah, I can see lots of people now next time they're meeting.
Loads of stuff I can share with that, but I could be here all day on that.
Yeah, I think it's great fun. I just love the fact of kind of people just kind of staring at each other's hands and they go, have you been listening to Helen? Yeah.
Yes. Just quietly. You know, it's kind of fun, I suppose, especially when you're doing a lot of online stuff. People might talk with their hands and to actually just take the time to watch what people are doing with their hands while you're watching them online. It won't be as obvious when you're online watching people on video, right? It would be possibly in a meeting room. So it would be fun for you to just kind of have a look at them and just think to yourself intuitively, what is their hand shape? What is their finger length? What are you feeling? Thumb length can often tell you a lot too. And how close do you hold, people naturally hold their thumbs to their hands. Now, the more people hold, now this is actually a trick for a meeting room, right? But you know how people don't always tell you the whole story?
Yeah.
And you know, am I kind of like, my intuition is suggesting here that they're holding their cards quite close to their chest and they're not actually telling us everything that's going on. Well, if they're the type of person who tends to hold their thumbs naturally when they're lifting their hands quite close to the palms, they are the types who don't share their cards. They are the types who are holding something within and are not being open and direct. Whereas people like me who tend to hold their hands, their thumbs quite far away from their palms are pretty much, you know, what you see is what you get. They are people who like to just get the job done, just go for it, let's be direct. You know what I mean? You can worry less about them holding. It doesn't mean that they're not holding anything back, but it's less likely that there's a story going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. So that's good for all interrogators to know as well. So.
Yeah, I'm sure the interrogators know way more than I do.
Yeah, let's not talk about what they do with their fingers. But anyway, that's another thing. That's fantastic. That's really great, great fun. And I mean, obviously, you're working with people now, you know, with the hand of the fingerprinting sort of analysis. I mean, through the work that you've done with people, are there any things that, you know, people have discovered about themselves or some surprises that you've had as a direct result of using this process or technique?
Yeah, well, I have to say that there are times where I think I know a person and then I do their fingerprints and I kind of go, I feel like I might be making a mistake in this interpretation, but I'm just going to tell you what your fingerprints say. And then I share it with them and they go, oh, yes, that is exactly who I am. So it's kind of like they show up as one person, but actually when you look at their fingerprints, you discover who they really are. And in all those incidences where that has actually happened, I have encouraged them very much to be who they really are because they are unhappy not showing up as themselves. And when they have gone on to be themselves truly and honestly, they have been quite successful. So, you know, one in particular, one client in particular I'm thinking about is, that, you know, she was very much, she's one of these people who's very creative. She's very good at marketing. You know, on a corporate level, she would tick a lot of boxes in the creative marketing department, I think, and her ability to get a job done, to do branding, to make things look pretty, but not only that, but strategy-wise as well. But of course, what came out in her hands was that she was here to be a spiritual teacher. Now, a lot of people say spiritual teacher. I want to explain what I mean by spiritual. Spiritual is belief system. So I have a friend of mine who believes in, you know, the free market, and his spiritual system is the free market enterprise. You know, it's not about God, the universe and everything. It's about having a belief system about the way things work, your belief system, right? And so as a spiritual teacher, you're here to actually influence people and teach people about your belief system and how it can help them. And, you know, for her, of course, she took it a little more literally than that, but ultimately she put together, for the first time, she felt like she had permission to follow her heart and follow what she really believed in and put together her stuff. And she took all of those corporate skills she had and she actually applied them to a quite esoteric business in many ways. All the stuff that she'd been studying on the side, you know, when she wasn't in the corporate environment. And this business now, I mean, oh my God, she's serving thousands of people every year that are coming to her, thousands who pay her a lot of money to work with her. And she's really rocking it. Now, yes, of course, she's making mistakes along the way and et cetera, et cetera. She hasn't got everything perfectly sorted out. But, you know, for her, the sense of fulfillment about having made this impact on the planet and really she'll be able to leave a significant legacy with this thing that she's created. Now, she said to me that she would never have done that without a fingerprint analysis because it was like this mirror I've talked about before, yes. Just being put up in front of her. And her going, oh my God, she's so right. That's who I am. And I have now, my body says that's who I am. That means that's really who I am. I don't have to be confused anymore. I don't have to be unsure about who I am anymore. I don't have to meet anybody else's standards or needs. I can go and do what feels absolutely right for me. And look what happens when she did. You know, I'm picking that one. And then I had another client who worked for a big corporation, and she was made. She loved that corporation. Like you have no idea. And, you know, the brand, everything. She learned so much from them. She was just, you know, she started at 15 in their outlets and went all the way up into senior management, and then she was made redundant. And it was like somebody had pulled the rug out from underneath her. She didn't know what she was meant to be doing. She was trying to start all these businesses, trying to do all these different things, trying to teach all these different aspects. And when we looked at her fingerprints and we saw the elements of what she needed in her business in order for her to feel fulfilled, and then we applied them to the business that she was actually running, she saw very quickly, we saw how she could tweak what she was doing to bring in something completely different. And oh my God, she has like having struggled and having spent most of her savings. I think a lot of people come to me usually when they've tried everything else and they've spent their savings and they've suddenly realized it isn't all working, all these other things that other people tell them to do, because I'm very much against cookie cutter approaches. And I think we're all unique and we need to know what's right for us before we go and spend our money with people to learn how to do whatever. But anyway, she has gone on to create a business where she has like, I don't know, 4 or 5 employees. And she's working with, you know, other small businesses that have or making a few million in turnover. And she's really applying so much of what she learned before, but in the way that her fingerprints reveal would be best for her. And it's amazing to see this woman who was struggling so much with finding her path and seeing her now feel so certain and sure about what she's doing and having really found her right path. And, you know, when I see that kind of thing happening, that's when I feel like, oh my God, okay, so this crazy work that I do using people's fingerprints is actually really valuable. Because I do have my moments. Can you imagine? My husband's an ex-banker. And he kind of, we go to like a dinner party filled with all these other bankers and whatnot. And they, you know, him to turn around and say, yeah, my wife's a fingerprint or hand analyst. I mean, you know, they were what? So when I see the impact me doing this supposedly crazy out there different thing makes on people, it makes me realize that actually what I'm doing is worthwhile. Because I think it's that butterfly effect, isn't it? It's the butterfly who flits its wings on one side of the world and there's a tsunami on the other side. We have butterfly wings to do. And each of these stories, I can go on. I mean, I've got a woman in Norway who just, again, felt very lost, unsure of herself, also coming out of corporate and had a lot of corporate thinking about what she was doing and how she was doing it. And it was keeping her really quite stuck. And I just got an email from her yesterday. And I'm just reading through this. I'm like, oh my God. And she's just like, it's like she was this really tight bud in so much pain. And then we did her fingerprint analysis and we took it and she ended up, we did a mini half day with her. And then she ended up deciding to do a full day with me where we kind of looked at both the fingerprints and the business and what it needed to look like and what, you know, what she needed to be doing and gave her the fundamental signposts and markers of what the business needed to look like. Oh my God, the stuff I've received from her, it's like reams of stuff of how she's just blossomed. It's like, she's this peony, this tight peony that you make the quite small buds and then they suddenly blossom into these massive, huge, full flowers. And honestly, reading that email today, I was like, wow. I didn't know what to say. I mean, who knows, you know, how people might blossom when you finally put a mirror up to them about who they really are and who they really here to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love these examples you shared because we're big fans here of Sir Ken Robinson, and he talks obviously a lot about people being in their element and how, you know, you just notice when somebody is absolutely doing what they love. It just kind of emanates from them and you can tell.
It's not just what they love. I think it's also, you know, it's all very well to do something you love, but it's the way you're doing. If you're doing what you love the wrong way, it all goes pear-shaped. So It's about understanding what you love, but it's not only understanding what you love, but actually how do I need to do what I love to stay in love with it?
Yes. Nice distinction.
Yes, because a lot of people will jump on their passion and will do it and then it'll all go pear-shaped and it won't work. And then they'll be like, I hate that thing. It's killed my passion. And so I have quite a few people who come to me when their passion has been killed too. And they kind of go, I used to love this thing. And now I'm just like wanting to just beat my head against the wall. And I'm going, it's not what you're doing, honey. It's how you're doing it. It's how you are showing up, you know? And really, if we can help people to step into greater leadership by helping them to show up in the way that is right for them, that's when everything flows for not just them, but for everybody around them too.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And look, this is clearly a deep, fascinating subject. And, you know, I could certainly listen to you talk and talk about this for hours and hours. And I know that you can talk on this subject for hours and hours. It's brilliant stuff. You know, we're getting towards the end now. So, I mean, perhaps you've got, you know, for our listeners, you know, sort of three key things they could take away for today. You know, what would those three things be?
Well, I hope that they have got some personal insights about themselves from what we've been talking about, that will help them to see themselves and how they're showing up in a slightly different way, and that will allow them to make slight, very slight changes that will make how they show up as leaders much smoother. I also hope that they've got some insights about their, you know, their colleagues. And whether that's their team leaders or their bosses, and about how they can communicate. If they look at their hands or they analyze these people or notice these people slightly differently and see how they show up and think, well, how do I need to communicate with this person in order to excite them, thrill them? You know, does this person need more communication? Does this person need more a sense of connection? Does this person just want a plan? Does this person just want a job to do? Are they just an action-driven doer? You know, what do I need to do and how do I need to communicate with each of these people to get the best out of them and as a result get a better, you know, have a better experience as a leader for myself? And I think the thing that the message that I would really, really like to put across to anybody listening is that you are a leader no matter what you're doing. Even if you don't have a team underneath you, because you're a leader in your own life. And a leader is a person who decides what they want. They have a vision, you know, they have a clarity and they have a simplicity to that vision about what they're trying to achieve and what they want to create. And then they do what they love, what motivates and excites them to create that vision. And that each of us are responsible for this world that we live in. And if we live with apathy, and we live by complaining about things and about how, you know, things aren't working and things don't, but we're not actually doing anything. We're not talking. And sometimes doing, by the way, talking is enough of a doing, because a leader influences other people, inspires other people who may end up being the doers. But either way, talk about stuff. Talk about how you'd like things to be. Start asking, what could I do differently to make not only my life better, but the people around me's life better too? How can I honor them and how can I honor me? How can I respect them? How can I respect myself? You know, how do I want to show up? How do I want this world to be? Get a clarity within yourself that will help you to decide how you want to show up and what kind of leader you want to be, what kind of difference you want to make in this world, because you are here to make a difference in your own unique way, even if it's only influencing one person who then goes on to influence others.
Fantastic. Really powerful stuff that, and I do hope that people will not only sort of take on board the learning, but act on it and see how they can change and improve not only how they are, but also how the people around them are as well. Fantastic stuff. Now, if people want to find out more, Helen, or to get in touch with you, how do they do that? So your website, for example?
Okay, well, my website address is hands-on-business.com. So that's handsonbusiness.com with the hyphens either side of the on. And, you know, feel free to go, you know, you may want to just check me out, first of all, via the website. There's also a really great little video there that explains a little bit more about hand and fingerprint analysis and why your hands in particular versus other parts of your body are have a lot of neurons and how they relate to your brain and how your brain works, etc. So you might find that quite interesting. And also, you know, explains a bit more about the kind of information you can find in your fingerprints. There's also a video on there that I did immediately with a client after we'd done a fingerprint analysis. And the reason why I did that video was because a thing that showed up in her hands was that she needed to be more in the spotlight. She needed to be more visible. And so I said, okay, come on, let's just do a video. And we did a video where she answered about her experience. But not only that, she also answered a lot of frequently asked questions that people you know, wonder whether they should do it or whether there's something value in it, etc. So it's worth watching that from that perspective as well. But what I would love more than anything else, I think, is I really enjoy having conversations with people. And as a result, I'm always open to, I have certain times in my diary where you're very welcome to book in a call with me to find out more about fingerprint analysis, or ask me about working with me on fingerprint analysis, or just to have a chat. I call them a quick chats, right? You can do that by using the Bitly link, which is, http://bit.ly/askhelen. I've just used that short URL there, ask Helen after Bitly. And it's a way for you to go to my diary and book in a call with me and tell me what you want to chat about.
Yeah, that's
otherwise, perfect. You can find me on Facebook, or you can find me on LinkedIn under Helen Elizabeth with a Z, Elizabeth Evans, EVANS. In both cases, you know, it's / whatever the LinkedIn or Facebook profile is, Helen Elizabeth Evans. And on Facebook, I also have a business page called Hands On Business. And you can just search for that, hands-on-business.
That's perfect. We'll make sure either that the links are available to the podcast listeners, but also if you're unsure or want to find out more and want to pass a message on indirectly, you can do it via podcast@leadersandmanagershub.com. But that's been a fascinating session and interview with you, Helen. Thank you so much for your time and for sharing so much with us. And wishing you all the best with your future success.
Thanks so much, Gary. It's been a huge privilege to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thanks so much. They never second guessed, they didn't set limits. Are you a follower or a visionary? Can you handle the load that you were meant to carry? Cause we're on a mission, listen, it's beyond description. We don't wanna fit in if we're living in a contradiction. We need a brand of passion that you can't imagine. Don't hesitate, rub the lamp, Aladdin.